newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news, as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to another beautiful summer Friday afternoon here in lovely Vancouver. And it is time for Scald's Hall here on CITR 101.9 FM. And today we're going to build a world. We're going to build several worlds. We're going to talk a little bit about world building. What does it mean to create an entirely different place in which to set a story? Why do we do it? How do we do it? What possesses us to do this? What purpose do they serve? And why do we enjoy them so much? These are questions that we will not answer, but we will ask and think about a little bit. We're going to talk today to a local author, artist, writer, performer, a person who engages in a lot of different kinds of work. She's recently finished up a novel that will be coming up soon. So we're going to be listening here to an interview with Astra Crumpton here on CITR 101.9 FM and talk a little bit about the worlds that she builds just as an example of this. So don't go away, stay tuned, and here we go. You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and we are here now with our next guest of the day, Astra Crumpton. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really great. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a creative consultant and an entrepreneur. So I do a number of different creative endeavors, including illustration, novels, comics, and some performances in the sense of workshops and panels.
And what kind of content do you create?
Primarily fantasy, which includes for me the steampunk subgenre, high fantasy, including basically entire world creation with races, magic, the whole works, and then also any spin-offs from there. So whether that goes into illustration work, comics, sewn craft, I even have been creating recipes just to flesh out an entire setting. Yeah, I love that kind of flavor. It really gives you an entire setting to sink your teeth into, and I want to offer that in my own work as well.
You create work and you do workshops. How did you get involved doing things like this?
Workshops was something that people told me I knew a lot about or that my advice was very helpful, and it just kind of evolved from people asking me questions, and I started doing it as a means of kind of softly promoting my work and myself. At conventions, I would have events going on as well as just an artist table, so I would do an hour-long panel on various topics, and it got such a good response from it that I started doing them on a regular basis.
Yeah, what kind of topics do you typically cover?
My most popular ones are cosplay and costume design, because at conventions there's a lot of people who are trying to get into that or who have problem-solving questions. Character creation and world design, which applies to games, novels, and comics, and I make sure that the topics I cover are applicable to any of those avenues. And then also a basic intro into how to do comics, which includes print and web comics.
You mentioned games. What kind of games do you develop?
Primarily tabletop games. I have done some concept work for Android-style app games, but for the most part, I stick with pen and paper dice games.
And what kind of games have you worked on?
There's one that is a steampunk app game that is a kind of choose-your-own-adventure story. Then there's also the tabletop RPG version of Ul'Zareth, which is my novel world. And that's one that that I'm primarily focusing on.
What influences do you have in your work?
Currently, probably the biggest one, simply for the versatility, is Neil Gaiman. He is one of those people who is a big name, and most people know him from his books, but he has always had an interest in film and comic and illustration and novels, and he has managed to do all of those things very successfully. And that's kind of the avenue I want to take. We generally live in a world where people say, well, you can't do everything. You have to pick one thing, and that has to be your specialty. And I'd like to kind of go back to the Renaissance idea of being the jack of all trades, the factotum, where you apply all of the knowledge you've gleaned from different aspects and combine them into one to give you kind of a more holistic view of creativity.
Did you have any formal education in creating any of these, or are you self-taught?
I am self-taught. I did go to university, but I took courses for things that interested me to give myself information about topics that I liked. So I studied medieval studies and Greco-Roman studies, history and art and that sort of thing. But I didn't do any formal training for writing or illustration. That was entirely self-taught.
Sounds like it must have been a bit of a challenging path.
It's one of those labors of love. It's one of those things that you do it because you can't stop doing it. I have always had my brain completely stuffed full of ideas, and the creative avenues that I pursued were simply a means of getting that out. The style of art that I developed grew from my need to more accurately portray these creatures and these characters that I saw. And so my style really evolved from an effort of capturing these things that I couldn't just go into this world and bring a camera. So I had to find some other way of expressing it and sharing it.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the worlds that you've worked in?
My worlds have all sprung up from my love of certain genres, and my favorite genre is the fantasy genre. I like the idea that you can have an entire world structure that's built on principles that don't necessarily mirror our own. Just taking a single idea and running with it of saying, okay, if this is true for these people, then what kind of effect, what kind of domino effect will that have on the way that their structure is built? And my primary world setting is called Ul-Zarith, and it is a very magically heavy world. It is magic has been always an integral part, as gravity or physics would be in ours. And because of that, their technology and their societies have developed very differently. It doesn't make sense for them to do some complex machinery that requires all of the finite resources that are then put just into that machine and that constantly need to be upkept and constantly need to be fueled if they can just use renewable energies in the form of magic. So a lot of their technology has developed completely differently than ours, and because of that, it has also had to retain the sense of balance and the sense of sustainability, because it is this sense of flow and this energy source that requires on people to fuel it. So it's enabled me to explore a lot of social concepts that give me a chance to not only make soft commentary on the way that we live, but also to expand the imagination of going, how could things be if we were connected to our world in a more cohesive fashion. So that's my primary one. I also have a steampunk world, which is Chronicles of Tyrene, which I have some short stories for, and which is the basis for the app game that I mentioned. And then I also have some urban fantasy, which is one of my other favorite genres, which deal with things like demons and were creatures, like shifted animal forms. And those things are more heavily based on Earth culture. So I take an element from either mythology or from urban myth and then work with that as it being a real concept that actually exists.
How has your work and the worlds that you work in developed over time?
I've certainly gotten more sophisticated. When I was younger, my works were very based on character-driven plot. So the worlds kind of grew up based on what the characters needed. And as I learned more about our own world, I began to understand the complexities of how religion and social structure and law and fashion all interact to influence each other. It's one of those things where one thing can't change without affecting everything else that's around it. You don't have changes come simply because somebody had a whim someday. It's because of pressures from society or interests of the people from influences of other cultures. So having these world structures became a lot more integrated with the flow of politics and the flow of changes in development of technology. And so learning about those things in Earth enabled me to better write and better explain these things and concepts that I was exploring in other world settings. So I've certainly expanded my view, and I'm trying to tell more diverse stories than I used to, and more complex and grittier tales.
If you could go back in time and give any advice to your younger self from when you were just starting off, what might you say?
I would probably say three things. Firstly, have patience. I used to try and get my projects done in one sitting because I worried that if I put them down, I wouldn't be able to come back to them. And I had to train myself how to keep that interest and that fire burning and not get distracted by the newest, shiniest idea. So patience would be a key one, of sticking with it and understanding from the get-go that something that has quality will take time to do. My second advice to myself would be to not try and do everything. Because I have so many ideas and because I have so many interests, I probably sabotage myself a little bit in trying to do all of it at once. And the more things you put on your plate, the slower each one takes to actually finish. And the third piece of advice would be to not lose focus. I have always kind of kept checklists, whether they're for the day or for the 10-year plan of what I wanted to do. And sometimes it's easy to kind of lose the sense of, well, can I actually do this? Is this a feasible thing? Rather than, well, it doesn't matter in the long run. Like, what's more important? Do I give up on the dream because I am not instantly a bestseller, or do I stick with it because I'd rather the stories be told? And whoever wants to listen, I'm glad that they're there. So the third one of focus is more to have faith in yourself and to believe that the idea that you have and the story you have to tell is worth telling, and that somebody out there is going to be affected by it, and hopefully in a positive way.
You've talked a little bit about creating your settings. Can you tell us a little bit about how you go about creating your characters?
Characters for me have always sprung out of some concept, so some basic aspect of their personality, and the entire thing spirals out of that. And it's very much for me having conversations with somebody. You get to know them the same way that you would any person you run into on the street. And that usually has an equal portion of what kind of personality they have and what kind of events they have lived through. And character development for me has always been something that has been very driven by goals. And so my characters are generally driven by what they are trying to achieve and what they are able to achieve. And those two things don't often match up, whether the dreams are a lot larger than their capabilities or whether a lot more is expected of them than they were intending on giving. And that dichotomy between what you want to do and what you must do has always been something that I feel is very accessible for everyone, because we all have that struggle between, you know, the dream and the 9-to-5, or between what we would like to do and what we have the talent to do. And so that is something that is kind of at the core of all of my characters, and everything that I tell in the story is things that I have learned about them in the telling. So it's often a surprise for me in the writing of it as it is for the person reading of it. So they're, as far as I'm concerned, fully fleshed people, and it's getting to know them as opposed to creating them.
Do you have any upcoming projects or appearances that you would like to talk about?
For appearances, my next big one will be Imaginarius Fantastica, which is in Vancouver. And there's a website that's already up for it that you can check out, which is imaginariusfantastica.com. It's a Christmas craft fair, not themed on the holidays so much as it's a good time for people to pick up gifts. And it focuses on the fantasy and on the alternative, as well as kind of mystic and steampunk and subgenres of fantasy. And for projects that I'm working on, my next novel will be coming out in February, and I'm doing the kind of preliminary build-up towards that. So there's going to be a pre-order package where you can get all sorts of extra goodies, because I'm key on trying to, you know, give you the most for your money. And that is Legend of the Quill, which is the first of an epic trilogy. And it is also set in Ul'Zareth. It's kind of the ancient history of how the world was shaped the way that it was in one of the most cataclysmic wars that the world had ever seen. So it's a dark tale, but definitely one of fantastic magic and interference from the gods in mortals' lives, and the changing of understanding the borders of countries as the East and West clash. So it should be an exciting adventure to follow.
I also understand that you do public readings as well.
I do. I am part of a group in Victoria called the Double Dog Dare, and they do readings in Victoria, Vancouver, and Seattle, and they happen every 2 months, and it's generally we kind of take over a coffee shop or a bookstore, and we have local authors come and read, and the goal of it is to try and get unknown authors or independent authors well-known, and also to get people who are thinking of publishing or who are interested in making a career of their writing a chance to have an an audience that they can present their stuff to and see what sort of response they get and see what kind of changes that they are recommended to make or ways that they can improve their craft. So it's about one third peer review and two thirds practice on public speaking. And so every month I have some piece that we read. Sometimes we have a theme and sometimes it's just, you know, whatever your latest work is. And the goal is that we are able to kind of share our work and try and get our books to a wider audience.
Do you have any final parting thoughts for our listeners?
I have a website that I would point them towards if they're interested in looking into my stuff or in following some of my work. It is www.astracrompton.com.
Yes, and we've been listening here to novelist, visual artist, and game designer Astra Crompton here on Skald's Hall at CITR 101.9 FM.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Light up your summer with digital eco-art. Come join the Locomoto Art Collective from 9 to 11 p.m. on Sunday, July 28th for a stroll through one of Vancouver's crown jewels, Queen Elizabeth Park. Celebrating youth, technology, and nature, this family-friendly, free exhibition will include 12 visual projections, audio, sound art, interactive new media works in the large quarry, highlighting sustainable practices with technology.
And welcome back to us here live at CITR 101.9 FM, and that was Astra Crompton. And just once again, in order to find out more about her work, you can just go online to her website. That's www.astracrompton.com. URLs are so much easier to remember now. Remember back in the 90s, before we had things like Firefox, you had to remember every little dot. And at the time, the phrase hypertext transfer protocol was, for the general public, new. And if you weren't one of the computer scientists who had designed the internet in 1993 or 1994, at that particular moment when AOL was first coming out and other competitors, it was all new and you're trying to figure out how to go where you want to go on the internet. Okay, well, anyway, that's a digression of for another time. www.astracrompton.com. The Greek word for star, Crompton, CROMPTON.com. And you can find information about her new books, about comics that she's been involved in, and a lot of other things. And one of many interesting local artists. Well, local being Vancouver Island in this case. Anyway, world building. It's kind of interesting. I remember, like I said, growing up back in the 20th century and reading and watching science fiction then, and at the time, you get this especially around the era of the 60s, so with writers like Frederick Pohl and Robert A. Heinlein and Gene Roddenberry, that D.C. Fontana, a lot of people that were working at the time, writing at the time, were using science fiction. And in earlier generations, they used fantasy for this too, as a means of telling stories that were too politically sensitive to just directly address. And so you wanted to tell a story about Cold Wars, for example. The 60s was full of Cold Wars. If you just told a story about the time that you were living in, the discourse around it might just simply degenerate into a generic argument about politics, and that's not particularly insightful, uplifting, helpful, or entertaining. So what they would do is they would take the general concept of a Cold War And then they would strip away its contemporary context and contemporary personalities, and then they would create a couple of analogous things. So, for example, the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. The original Star Trek series had a Cold War between the United Federation of Planets and the Klingon Empire. You know, and it sounds cheesy, and so you put a bunch of copper makeup on half your actors, you give funny ears to another one, and all of a sudden, you can get away with telling stories that you couldn't otherwise address because, A, people would pay attention to the story as an entertainment medium and think about the message without degenerating it into a generic argument, and B, you could get it past the censors of the time. It's kind of interesting. They did a lot of that. The original Star Trek series had a couple of episodes where the Cold War analogy came out, the Organian Peace Treaty episode, and A Private Little War, which is a really silly episode where Kirk gets attacked by a giant white monkey, but in the middle of it, they have an argument about the Vietnam War. Him and Bones, they do. It's kind of interesting. Of all five Star Trek series that ran, the only one that dealt with a current issue war as it was happening was the original series. And, you know, wars happen all the time, but it was the only one, to my knowledge, that did. Definitely the Next Generation didn't. They did cover war, but not specifically towards the climate of the time that they were being produced in, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of science fiction from that era, that's why the world building would happen. They would build a world in order to tell a story that was, for one reason or another, too hot to address in its contemporary setting. And so you could take a look at an issue without getting mired in the details of the reality of it and just take a look at the general concept and what that might mean. And that's what led a lot of the golden era, the classical era of science fiction, that's what a lot of the writers did. Isaac Asimov, Frederick Pohl, a lot of them did that. And it's really interesting to go back now and take a look at their work, because science fiction nowadays, at least in the film science fiction, has a much broader audience than it did in the past. Star Trek went off the air in the 60s for being a non-profitable little show that nobody watched. And, you know, this past month, it was one of the big summer blockbuster movies that came out just a few weeks ago. So, you know, things have changed. But what they do with science fiction has also changed. What world building now tends to have a lot of spectacle in it. It's kind of interesting that way, because there's a lot of things that we want to be able to do rather than things that we try to think through. It's kind of interesting. The story Blade Runner is based on, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is set only 6 years from now, the year 2019, had police officers that regularly read academic research papers on artificial intelligence. Okay, Deckard wasn't a police officer in the book. He was a bounty hunter, but similar function. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that that's kind of moved away from that. So world building now is a little bit less about heady things like this and a little bit more visceral is one of the changes that has happened. You still get that residual, though, because a lot of science fiction that's produced now is very heavily influenced on what had come before, and so you still find a lot of aspects to this. And that changes over time along with everything. A lot of other world building is done simply because authors are bored. Probably I shouldn't destroy my nerd cred too badly without mentioning Tolkien, and yes, he did 40 years of world building at least, and that was just before his first before the Fellowship of the Ring was published, and he kept doing it afterwards, and he just did it because he wanted to create a backstory for the two languages that he had written. He came up with two languages, Sindarin and Quenya, and he decided to give them a history because every language needs a history. And that's what it started off as. And so it was never intended for public consumption, but he was convinced to publish it. A lot of other people do world building because Tolkien did. It's kind of interesting to see writers who fall into that. Some writers who publish perhaps a little bit younger than their wisdom might dictate and do it because everyone else has done. Some world building is simply a romanticization of real history. So there's some cultures that have been blessed with histories that they can look back onto and use to create a lot of wonderful, wild, and lovely stuff. And speaking of world building and building things, that's what we're going to be taking a look at next here at CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a listen to one of the classic episodes of X-1, which is a science fiction radio drama. So unlike the variety show versions that we've been listening to for the last couple of weeks, this one is telling of a very serious tale set in another time. And so let's take a listen to an example. So don't go away, stay tuned.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, To the Future, by Ray Bradbury. Time is an interesting phenomenon. A ticking clock, the running sands of an hourglass. All these have captured the imagination of men. But time is more. It exists now and then and in the future. Suppose we are in the year 1955. Coexistent in time may be worlds we have never seen. The worlds of the past and of the future. The year 1955. It was a spring night in Mexico. Fiesta time. The fireworks shot up into the clear dark sky and a papier-mâché bull ran about the plaza chasing boys and laughing men. Mr. and Mrs. William Travis stood on the edge of the yelling crowd, smiling.
Bravo, Barbara!
Well, what is it? What do they say?
They're cheering for the bull. Here he comes. Good, isn't he? Look how they rig that fire breathing.
Oh, Bill, it's wonderful. I've never enjoyed myself so much in my life.
It's terrific.
They caught the bull.
Bravo, Toro!
Bill, it will go on, won't it?
What?
I mean, our trip.
Sue, don't worry. I've got enough traveler's checks for a lifetime. Relax.
No, but suppose they find us.
Forget it. They haven't a chance.
But suppose they do. Suppose they take us back.
They'll never find us. Oh, relax. Enjoy yourself.
If it only lasts.
Come on. Let's get out of the crowd, hmm? You need a drink.
Let's try something different this time. I want to try every drink there is in the world.
Don't worry. There's no rush. We've got plenty of time now. In here. There's a table over there. Come on.
Bill.
Come on. What's
the matter? Don't look right away.
Huh?
Over your left shoulder, right by the end of the bar. That man.
What is it?
I saw him this morning in the plaza.
Oh, take it easy. The town's full of tourists.
He was at Juarez and at Tasco. Bill, I'm afraid.
Don't stare at him. Come on.
I know it's the same man. He was wearing the same white suit.
Sit down, Sue. Come on, dear. Smile. Act natural.
Bill, he's been following us. He's a searcher. I know he is.
Quiet. Here, boy.
Si, senor.
Benedictine and brandy, too.
Si, senor.
He's been watching us, Bill.
Pull yourself together, Susan.
He can't take us back.
Will you quit worrying? The chances are one in a thousand that they found us. It's probably just a coincidence.
I want to lie down. I think I'm going to be sick.
Susan, hang on, will you? If he is looking for us, we can't run out. It'd attract attention.
We must have slipped up when we checked out in New York.
What's he doing now?
Stopped our waiter. He's asking him something.
Well, may just want a drink.
Bill, I can't stand it. I've got to go upstairs and lie down.
All right. As soon as we finish our drinks. What's he doing now?
He's nodding at me. As if he knows me. He's smiling. Billy's coming over here.
Watch yourself. We've got to go right on in front of him, so if he is what we think he is, he won't suspect.
I can't.
We've got to. Come on. So I said to David, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Mr. Christian, you did not pull up your pants leg when you sat down.
What? I'm afraid you've got the wrong person. My name isn't Chrysler.
Kristen.
Oh. I'm William Travis. I don't see what my pants leg has to do with it.
Mind if I sit down? See, everyone nowadays pulls up his pants leg when he sits down. Like this. See, it keeps the trouser from bagging at the knees. But of course, if you're not used to this style of clothing...
Now, see here, we don't know you.
You don't? I'm sorry. I thought I knew you.
This is our table, if you don't mind.
You see, I'm looking for two friends of mine. A man and his wife. Very much like you. The man is an atomic scientist. The wife, a bacteriologist. Very important people. They work on government business.
What are you talking about?
And when I find my friends, I'm going to take them home with me.
Look here, Mr.
Sims. That will do for now.
Well, look, I understand you thought you knew us, but you see, you're mistaken. Now, if you'll excuse us, my wife and I were just going up to our room. We have to make an early start in the morning.
Oh, going for a trip? Acapulco, perhaps? Oh, a lovely spot.
Never mind where we're going.
Yes, yes, of course. You don't like crowds, tourists. Probably like to get off the beaten path. You know, I have a vacation folder here that might interest you.
Please, Bill, let's go.
It's put out by an outfit that calls itself Travel in Time, Incorporated.
Travel in Time?
Yes. They've come up with a rather intriguing idea. Here. Travel in Time, Incorporated can costume you, put you in the crowd at any place and time in history. We guarantee to teach you any language you need to move freely in any year without risk of detection. This summer, why not escape from the worries of our modern world? Take your vacation in time.
That's impossible, of course.
Ah, but think what it would mean. A chance to escape all the tensions of an unpleasant life. War, insecurity, fear. Suppose you were a scientist working on a dangerous bomb project. Or you, Mrs. Travis. Suppose you were a bacteriologist working on disease cultures. And you had a chance to escape all that. To take a vacation 200 years in the past. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it? To escape to a more peaceful world. A trip back to 1955.
1955? But you said a vacation in the past.
So I did. But you see, 1955 is the past. If you come from the year 2155.
2155?
Yes. Terrible times. Most unpleasant. A war raging. An atomic bacteriological war. Terrible times. With none of the little comforts we enjoy today. Like this fine Havana cigar.
Well, I want to go upstairs. I want to lie down.
If you were living then, think of how wonderful it would be to take a vacation in time. Back to now. Suppose a young couple, like yourselves, took a trip to 1955 and didn't want to come back. Do you know what would happen? The government sends a searcher back to look for them.
This is all fantastic
nonsense. The searcher finds them and brings them back. Back to that miserable, insane, stark, pleasureless world of 2155. A pity, isn't it?
Look here, Sims.
Do you think I shall find my two friends, Mr. Travis?
Bill, please take me upstairs. I don't feel well.
Oh, is the lady feeling a bit ill? How unfortunate.
Here are the drinks, Senor.
Ah. Well, shall we drink a toast? To 2155. To the future.
Inside. Inside, quick.
What are you doing?
Shoving a chair under the doorknob.
He knows. He's been following us. He's a searcher.
Look, keep quiet, Sue. I want to think.
You're going to take us back.
It isn't over yet. I've got a headache.
I'll get you an aspirin. What will they do to us?
I don't know. Something slipped. Something must have slipped.
But we were so careful.
The searchers are trained to watch for detail. Things like not pulling up my trousers. Started him thinking, there's a man who isn't used to ancient clothes. I could kill myself for giving it away.
No, it was my walk. These high heels. Here.
Thanks. The nerve of that Sim sitting there looking us up and down like animals, smoking those stinking cigarettes.
You know, that's how I first noticed him at Tasco. He had four bottles of liqueurs and a pile of chocolates.
Yes, he still hasn't gotten over that first greedy hunger. We've got to look out for that. It's the sure sign of somebody from the future. Trying to make up for a lifetime of shortages by stuffing yourself sick. Remember our first night?
Bill, I can't stand it. We've got to get out of here.
What are you doing?
Packing. Get the suitcases out.
It's no use.
What do you mean? We can get to Acapulco by morning.
Don't you think he's watching?
We could get away.
No. We've got to sit tight. Maybe he isn't sure of us yet. Maybe we can still figure out some way to escape. Come on now. We'll need our strength. We'd better try to get some sleep.
No, I won't go back. Security, pull it. The bomb. It's falling and killing.
Sue, what's the matter?
No,
Sue.
No!
Sue, wake up, Sue.
Bill, where are we?
It's all right. Calm down, honey. We're still in 1955. It's all right.
Oh.
You must have had a nightmare.
Oh, Bill, it was awful. We were back there, 2155. Oh, Bill, we won't go back there, will we ever?
Go back to sleep, honey. It's all right. We're in Mexico, 1955, and we're going to stay here. Sue, I've been lying awake here thinking. He's still testing us. He's not absolutely certain. He's got all the time in the world. He can stay here as long as he likes. And then bring us back to the future 60 seconds after we left it.
They can't make a scene, can they? They don't dare come out in the open.
No. It might change the future. They're afraid of that.
Bill, if we could only tell somebody, ask for
help. You know we can't. That's why we had to submit to the psychological block treatment before they okayed our vacation. We couldn't tell if we tried. The block's too strong.
Maybe we can break it, Bill.
Oh, what's the use, darling? Who'd believe a crazy story like ours? Who'd believe we come from 2155? No, we can't tell. And they'll have to get us alone to put us in the time machine to send us back.
Then that's it, Bill. We'll never be alone. It's still fiesta tomorrow. It'll be easy to stay in the crowd.
Yes. Yes, that's the only chance. We can't let him get us alone. He won't get us back to that war and that insane world.
Bill.
Could be the room clerk.
At 3 in the morning?
I'd better answer.
Don't, Bill, don't.
I've got to. Hello? Hello?
Mr. Travis?
What's the idea? It's 3 in the morning.
Yes. I just wanted to remind you, the rabbits may hide in the forest, but a fox can always find them.
What was it, Bill? Bill?
Never mind. Come on. Let's get some sleep while we can.
Buenos dias, senor y señora.
Good morning, Senor Gomez.
I trust you are spending pleasant days in my hotel. Fiesta time is the best.
Yes, it's been lovely.
Your special table is all ready for breakfast.
Hey, where in blazes the hotel? You, Buster, where's the hotel in this godforsaken sinkhole of a one-horse town? All the blighted deserts of the whole stinking country.
It's all on record.
Oh, great excitement. Very great.
What is it?
They come with four trucks and innumerable automobiles.
Huh?
A motion picture company from Hollywood.
Oh, what are they doing down here?
They make the pictures of our fiesta for the background. That fat man, the one with the most colorful shirt, he is the chief.
Manager!
Director!
Manager! Where's the manager of this Adobe Fleabag?
Coming, senor. You will excuse me, senor. I hope the table is satisfactory. Coming, senor.
This is a break, so that movie company will draw crowds, and that helps us.
When can we leave, Bill?
Oh, not today. He'd be...
Okay, kids, end of the line. Ciao. Get up, Maxwell, and lay off the pepper. I got an ulcer.
Bill, there's Sims across the dining room.
Can't do anything now, not with these actors coming in.
Gloria, you sit next to Papa.
Hello.
Max, make sure nobody monkeys with the trucks and the gear.
Right, Chief.
Do we have to eat at this crummy joint, Joe?
Cheer up, sweetie. Your mere presence makes this chasins and truck roll into one.
No, not this early in the morning, Joe. I couldn't stand it.
Okay. Anything you want, laddies. It's on the dear old expense account.
They look happy, don't they?
There's an idea. Maybe I could hire two of them. I could say it was a joke.
Why?
We could dress them in our clothes, have them drive off in our car sometime when Sims couldn't see their faces.
Where would that get us?
With him off on their trail, we might make it to Mexico City. It'd take years to find us there.
Wait, that movie man's coming over.
Excuse me, you folks are Americans, aren't you?
That's right.
Boy, am I glad to see you. I'm so sick of hearing Spanish, I could kiss you. Hey, come on over and eat with us, huh?
Well, I don't think we should intrude.
Oh, come on. Misery loves company. I'm Misery, and that's the company. We're from Hollywood.
Yeah, so I understand.
Yeah. Boy, would I like to be there. Oh, I'm Joe Melton. I'm the director.
I'm William Travis. This is my wife, Susan.
Mutual. Come on over, kids. Join the party. Cheer us up. Only no tamales. I burned out 3 kidneys on tamales since I came over the border. Boy, am I funny, eh?
Wonderful.
Well, come on over. Hey, kiddies, I got new blood. Brother Yanks.
Just a moment, Mr. Travis. I thought you might be breakfasting with me alone.
Sorry.
I got him first, Mac. You want to join us?
No, I've already ordered. Mr. Travis, I think you'd better talk with me.
Say,
now.
Is this guy giving you trouble?
No, it's all right.
Then I'll say the word and I'll have Max pitch him out in his ear.
No, it's all right. We'll be right over, Mr. Melton.
Bill.
We'll talk to Mr. Sims. Mr. Melton, you sort of keep an eye on us, huh? After all, you found us first.
Yeah, sure. Well, come on over soon, kids.
Sit down, Mr. Travis. I hope you slept well.
Did you?
Well, I'm not used to spring mattresses, but there are compensations. I stayed up half the night trying new cigarettes and foods. A whole new spectrum of sensation, these ancient vices. We miss something in our world, don't we? And when we get back here, we try to cram it all in a few short days.
We don't know what you're talking about.
Still acting, eh? But it's no use. You can't stay in crowds all the time. I'll get you alone soon enough. I'm immensely patient. However, let's come to the point. You know we can't let you get away with this escape. Other people in the year 2155 might get the same idea and do the same thing. And we need people.
To fight your wars?
Bill.
It's all right, Susan. We can talk on his terms now. He's got us. We can't escape.
Oh, at last. Really, you know, you've been incredibly romantic, running away from your responsibilities.
Running away from horror.
Oh, nonsense. Only a war.
Only? With half the world dead and the other half dying?
Yes, but we can't have you escaping here while we drop off a cliff. Dying people love to know that others died with them.
Hey, kids, break it up. We're waiting on you.
The longer you keep me waiting, the harder it will go on you.
What do you mean?
We need you on that bomb project. Return now, and no torture.
Torture?
Yes. You see, later we'll force you to work. And after you finish the bomb, we'll try a number of complicated new devices on you.
Yeah.
As you say, you can't escape. We have all the time in the world here.
Sims, I'll make a deal with you. I'll come back now. If my wife stays here, alive, safe, away from that war...
No, Bill,
keep
no...
Keep quiet, Sue. Well, Sims, you need me for that bomb. You can duplicate her work.
It exceeds my authority, but, all right. Meet me in the plaza in 10 minutes.
All right. I'll pick you up in the car.
Good.
We'll drive out into the country to some deserted spot, and I'll have the time travel machine pick us up.
Bill, I won't let you.
Don't argue, dear. It's settled. Sims, there's one thing.
Yes?
Last night, instead of calling, you could have broken into our room and got us. Why didn't you?
Shall we say that I was enjoying myself? Take this new fine cigar, for example. Wonderful. Wonderful. Do you know that I have 12 boxes up in my room? And liqueurs, crème de menthe, Benedictine, crème de coco, and so many others. And the wine. Oh, I've got the closets full of them. And I shall so hate to leave it all. Well, I'll meet you in the plaza in 10 minutes. Your wife may stay here as long as she wishes.
All right, Sims, it's a deal.
Don't try anything now, Travis.
I know when I'm beat. We just want a few minutes to say goodbye.
I shall be seeing you then.
No, I won't let you do it. I won't let you.
Oh, please,
I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to get help.
You can't. The psychological
block. We've got to try. It's our last chance.
Hey, aren't you two going to join us?
Mr. Melton, I've got something to tell you, and you've got to believe me.
It won't work, Sue.
I've got to try.
Now, go ahead, kid. Spill it.
You've got to understand. You see, we really... Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, my head.
Huh?
I can't think. My head.
Say, you need a bromo, honey.
It can't work, Sue. The block's too strong. We better get the car.
Bill. Bill, please.
Someone's crying.
Somebody.
Now, breakfast, no time for people to cry. Now, what in the world could a good-looking kid like you find to cry about?
Bill, I won't let you do it.
Don't make it hard, Susan.
Let me go back with you. We'll get through some way.
You think I'd let you go back to that war? Sue, please stop. We haven't got much
time. It was so wonderful here, Bill. Please.
There he is. Smoking those Turkish cigarettes, waiting for it.
There must be some way we can both stay here.
Maybe there is.
Bill, what are you going to do?
Hang on, Sue, and duck when I tell you.
No, Bill, you're heading right for him.
He's not going to get either of us now. Down, Sue, down! Darling, it's all right.
Oh.
It's all over. Darling, this is the mayor.
Senor, your husband has been officially cleared in this most unfortunate affair. It is obvious this senor seems died of an unavoidable accident.
An accident? Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Adios, senor, senora.
Will they want to see you again?
No. No, I'm clear.
Oh.
I lost control of the car. That's the way it stands. Sue, I hated to kill him. I've never wanted to do anything like that in my life.
Where shall we go now? Mexico City?
The car's in the repair shop. Won't be ready till 4. And we'll get out.
Hey there, Travis. Wait up.
Oh, it's that movie man, Bill. He was very good to me when they had you in there.
Hey, I heard what happened. They sprung you, huh? Great, great.
Yes, it was an accident.
Well, lucky you didn't get hurt yourselves. Everything okay now?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Ah, it's fine, fine. But you both look a little rocky. Say, you want to get your mind off your troubles. We're through for the day. Clouds foul up our shooting schedule. We're going to put a header on it up at the hotel. Gloria's cracking the ice now.
Well, maybe we will join you. But first I've got to check up on the car.
Well, don't miss the party, kiddies. See you upstairs.
Bill, I don't
think... Relax, honey. We've got the break now. Sims is dead. Before they can put another searcher on our trail, we'll have time to make a clean getaway.
How about the car?
We'll be ready till 4. We've got a couple of hours to kill.
I'm so tired.
What you need is a little excitement. We rate a celebration, honey.
Well, I guess it would be nice to unwind.
Sure. We'll go up to Melton's room, have a couple of drinks, a few laughs. Don't worry, honey. It's all over. We can relax.
Great, great. Call me Joe. Gloria, yank it on the cork. We got company.
I'm way ahead of you. Here you are, kid.
You kids ready to drink? Yeah, that was a pretty messy business, but it's all over now, huh?
Yes, it's all over.
Time to unlax. Grab a glass, honey.
Thank you.
Hey, quiet, everybody. Quiet.
How about a toast to our guests?
Well, sure.
All right. To a very beautiful lady, lovely enough for the movies.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm not kidding. That's why I came over to you in the first place. I might even give you a test. Oh, I mean it, honey. You're pretty nice. I could make you a movie star.
And take me to Hollywood?
At least to get us out of Mexico.
You're not serious.
Well, sure I am. Gloria, how about a refill?
Yeah, coming up.
That sounds wonderful, doesn't it, Bill?
Los Angeles is a pretty crowded city, isn't
crowded?
it?
Crowded? Hey, wait till you see the sunset buzz.
Well, you don't really think I could be an actress, do you? You don't have to cheer me up anymore. I'm feeling wonderful
now.
No,
I'm serious.
Really? Well, what kind of a film do you think my wife would be good for?
Well, I want to do a suspense story. Sort of a war story, you know. Gloria, pour Mr. Travis another glass. A story about a man and a wife. You live in a little house. I'm just ad-libbing this, you understand?
Sure, go on.
There's a war on, see? A terrible war, you see? And they live in the year, 2155.
Yeah.
Now, here's the gimmick. They escape into the past, and they kill a man who follows them to bring them back. Gloria, honeypot, get Mr. Travis another glass. He dropped his. Well, sir, this couple takes refuge with a group of movie people. Safety in numbers, they figure.
Yeah.
Ah, but the story goes on. This couple is terribly important for a new bomb. Let's call it the leprosy bomb. So the searchers figure out a way that they can get them alone in a hotel room. Shove a chair under the door now, Max.
Yes, sir.
You see, the searchers may work alone, or in groups of eight, so that if one of them's killed, the rest carry on. Don't you think that'd make a wonderful picture, huh, Susan? Don't you, Bill?
You're not going to get us, Melton. Stand still.
Look out!
Put that gun down, Travis!
Mr. Travis.
Who is it?
The manager. Your car is all ready. Shall I...
Grab him!
Let go of me. Let go!
Let's not make things worse, Mr. Travis.
Let me in! What were those shots? Let me in!
The manager, he heard the shots. Let's get going.
Let go of me!
Let me in there! Let me in!
He'll break down the door in a minute. Max, get ready to travel.
Get a chair!
Take a good look, Mr. Travis. Take a good look at 1955. You won't be seeing it anymore.
Bill!
Throw the chair!
Bill!
All right. Break it down.
Who shot that? Where are they?
I was at the door. I heard them inside.
They're gone. The windows.
No, the iron bars are undisturbed.
What happened to them? They just disappeared, all of them.
Senor, I think you had better send for the priest and the holy water.
Later. They just disappeared.
Look in the closet. Bottles. Hundreds of bottles. And boxes of 20 peso pure Havana filled cigars. These crazy Americanos. Why would anyone leave all this behind?
Juan, never question providence. Ah, bien. There is enough here to last us both for a month. I think we can look forward to a most happy future.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you To the Future by Ray Bradbury. It was adapted for radio by Ernest Kinoy. Featured in the cast were Terry Keane, Alexander Scourby, Mercer McLeod, Joe DeSantis, Guy Sorrell, Alan Collins, and Stan Early. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter, and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
CITR is proud to support the 20th anniversary season of the Enchanted Evenings concert series at the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Classical Chinese Garden. Unwind at the end of every week with an eclectic musical performance. All concerts begin at 7 p.m. every Friday from July 5th to August 30th. For more information, go to VancouverChineseGarden.com.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer. Back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
And welcome back to us live at CITR 101.9 FM. It is just a few minutes before 2 o'clock, and coming up next, we will have Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. And today, we were taking a look and listen at, taking a look at this radio, we were taking a listen to... Look at, listen to. We were taking a listen to some of the interesting things world building can and does do for us when we tell stories. And so world building can provide us with things beyond simple character motivations when we create. And it can provide us with, as a listener, or yes, as a listener in this case, because like I said, it's radio. As a listener, it can provide us with a means of engaging with things that are otherwise... difficult to address and are really drudging and dreary. And so this particular X-1, for example, was about draft dodging. And that was a hot topic at one point, at least in the United States, not too long ago, relatively speaking. And it is a current topic in a lot of places in the world that have mandatory military service. Switzerland does, I know. South Korea does. Israel does. And so it's kind of an interesting way to engage with issues like that without getting pulled down into a political debate that is not fun at all. And why would we want to do that? What fun is there in that? Well, that's why we tell stories. I had a professor who once told me very lasciviously during the very first class, we were taking an introductory class to world literature, and this was when I was in my sophomore year during my BA. And he said that the reason that we read all of this stuff is for pleasure. And you have to say it as lasciviously as possible. Pleasure. And because that's what it's for. We tell stories to entertain. And if stories do not entertain, they are not stories and they do not get remembered. If you want the king of Assyria 2,000 years after you've written something to go hunt it down and rewrite it into a library and that be what you and that particular king get remembered for, then you have to actually be good at telling stories and not just didactic. And so here we had Ray Bradbury doing exactly that, and you might know him from Fahrenheit 451. A lot of people read that in school. I never actually read it in school, though I read it otherwise. But there you have it. stories like that, world building like that, can do a lot of really cool, fun, and interesting things. And that's why we do it. That's why creators create it. And that's why listeners, the audience, loves it so much. So we're going to be starting with Tyler and Cam in just a couple of moments. Don't go away. Sit back and continue to enjoy your Friday afternoon here on CITR 101.9 FM.